All right, well, welcome to another episode of the Glen Tech Mega Dave program. Dave, how you doing?
I'm terrific.
I don't know if I'm quite there with you, but technology, it's an interesting thing. It's you know, it's kind of funny. There's like a Louis C.K. And that's an interesting subject in itself. Maybe we'll talk about that sometime. But you know, he's kind of puts things into perspective of of like people getting mad at their phones, and he's like, you know, your phone's taking a minute to do something. He's like, people are getting angry. And he's like, give it a second. You know, it's fucking going to space and back. that's what I think is for these different comedians. The value of somebody like that is that they can, it is perspective, you know, because I think that the truly funny people sort of, they see the world in sort of a different way, but then also a way that you can relate to. There's too many of these comedians now who want to just basically be propagandist. They just want to, they want to try to sort of influence the way people think. But I think the truly funny people just sort of give you perspective on the world around you. They kind of make you think about things that you're doing, and I don't know. Am I making any sense?
No, I know what you mean. There's, you know, most good humor has an element of truth to it, you know, that people can relate to.
Right.
So, I mean, let's be honest, Saturday Night Live hasn't been funny for a while, and it's like, oh,
about 40 years.
Yeah, you want to tune in and hear another Trump joke or another, I mean, it's a little too dated. It's like, okay, we get it, you hate Donald Trump.
Right.
So much to the point you're willing to throw the funniness of your show that it's been based on for years down the toilet. So,
well, yeah, and there's a you know, there's a usefulness in satire and you know, political humor, but I think that it's different whenever you sort of you know, hate the people that you're, like Dana Carvey, whenever, you know, they talk to him about when he would do like the George H.W. Bush or whatever. And I don't think that Dana Carvey's a Republican. I don't think there's anything like that. But when you hear him talk about, you know, George H.W. Bush, there was definitely an element of respect and things like that. And so, like, if you're going, you know, if you're going to do certain humor about somebody and you don't have any element of sort of respect or reverence for that person, it just, you know, it ends up not being funny because it's just mean, you know, at the end of the day. And I mean, there's a place for sort of, I guess, evidence, but I think that Donald Trump, and I think history is going to reflect this, is probably one of the, you know, most misunderstood people in history, because, you know, he's been painted with this broad brush, and it's really inexcusable at the end of the day, because these people know him. They've known him for, you know, 40 years. He's gotten awards from the NAACP right alongside Muhammad Ali and Rosa Parks. He's done great things in New York. I think I've never even been to New York, but I think he like did, you know, helped to fix like the Rockefeller Center, and he's just done some great things there. And there's people that have met him and have known him, and they know that he's not a racist evil. He's not literally Hitler, but you know they've just let politics, and I think at the end of the day you have to blame Obama, you know, for all the vitriol, and it's not just his fault. This kind of stuff started during George W. Bush's time, where the media, when they sort of, his last 2 years of office, when they just, they sort of went on this campaign to destroy him.
Yeah, it's funny. I've been noticing the past couple days, excuse me, the similarities between kind of Trump and this this Starbucks guy, this Howard Schultz or whatever, that is supposed to run as an independent for president. And by the similarity in that, how they're treated, like before they decided to run for president, you know, nothing was ever said, you know, they had money, and, you know, the Schultz guy, he's a liberal, you know, as far as his ideology goes. And they all loved him until he decided to run as an independent. And he's been going on these shows, you know, like these talk shows, like NBC, you know, these news talk shows.
Sure.
And like, they're just, it's funny to listen to these, you know, so-called news anchors or whatever you want to classify them as, to, you know, you can hear like they're mad, and they're asking him, you know, well, why don't you just run as a Democrat? You know, if your policy, you know, if your stances and policies are good enough, why don't you just run? You know, you can tell they're just pissed that he just didn't decide to run as a Democrat. And he answered that. He told them, you know, there's some things that the Democrats are behind and have been here the past few years that he doesn't like, you know, and he's a businessman, you know.
Right.
And I'm sure that's probably a big part of it, that, you know, he doesn't believe in socialism, and that's a big part of there. But it's just funny to see how, you know, these guys, they're fine with them until they run against them, or really aren't helping them, I guess would be the best way. If they're not helping the Democrats, well, then you can just go to hell and you're evil Hitler. And, you know, it's entertaining, I guess, and it's sad in a way, but like, you just see that, you know, as soon as you go against them, you're the devil, you know.
Well, and it's because they're political operatives. They're not they're not journalists. That, you know, and I guess we've known that kind of for a while, but it's, you know, there's more and more examples every day, and there's. This is probably something that we should spend a podcast talking about, but just sort of the way that the media and the DNC, it's kind of a revolving door between people like, you know, Georgia Snuffleupagus, and just, you know, Cuomo. I mean, there's so many people that either they're related, or they're married to somebody, or they used to work for the DNC and now they're in the media, or vice versa. And so they have skin in the game, and that's, you know, that's not what journalism is supposed to be about. And that's why, people laugh, when like the Huffington Post and, BuzzFeed lays off journalists, and not that those people that work at either one of those publications should even be able to call themselves journalists, but, you know, that's why people kind of laugh, is because journalism has become a joke. these people, you know, you have people like the Oliver Darcy guy that spends his time trying to dox people, and he's been on a campaign to get Alex Jones banned from everything. He's a journalist, and he's working to censor people that he doesn't like. And the people, some of the people at BuzzFeed and some of the people at Huffington Post, the opinion section, that's they engage in that stuff all the time. And then when they get laid off and people on Twitter start dancing on their graves, they you know, it's how petty. It's disgusting that you would do, you know, that you would react this way. It's like, no, you have been openly pushing to have people censored and buried in outrage. You've doxed people so that they would lose their jobs and so that the mob would go after them. No, it's not disgusting. It's predictable. You have to deal with the fruits of your labor. It's like those people, I remember, you know, you're like a kid and you have a friend and friend over, and you guys are like playing swords or something, and your friend wants to take like cheap shots at your head, but anytime you start kind of fighting back, they go, wait, hold on, you know.
All's fair till I say it's not fair.
Yeah, right. Time out. Timeout. There's no timeout.
Every time I hear, you know, Oliver Darcy, I just like that clip where Alex Jones actually confronts him, you know, there in Washington, D.C. And the guy's just like this little, you know, he doesn't say anything. You know, Alex right. Jones is asking him, you know, why are you trying to get me deplatformed? Why are you coming after me? You know, what's your problem? And the guy just sits there and doesn't say anything. He's just right. such a little weasel, you know.
He thinks if he plays possum.
Yeah, he's if I don't do anything, I'll be okay. You know, it's like no one will see, you know. It's just that's a very telling video clip where he gets confronted right. and he has nothing to say at all. I mean, he can't even, you know, you would think in that case.
Won't even look him in the eye.
Yeah, I mean, you would think if he's trying to deplatform, if he doesn't like Alex, he doesn't even have an argument. Like, he can't even say, like, oh, I just don't like the things you say. I think you're this, that, or the other. He won't even say that. It's pretty crazy.
Well, I think that there's probably a real possibility that Alex Jones will rip off your genitals and you go back and kill the rest of your kind.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, Alex Jones, he's a big, intimidating guy. And Oliver Darcy's not. He's very junior high girlish, you know.
Right.
He just sat there on his little, had his little earbuds in and just wouldn't say anything. It was very
Roger
girlish.
Roger Stone said he has the worst breath in media.
Oh, I'm sure he does.
Yeah. Well, you know, a couple of the things that we're going to talk about today as we sort of get into it here. And we'll start off with the sort of the lighter subject and then maybe work into the heavier one. But this is something that I've been struggling with. And I mean, I've been struggling with it sort of actively every day. And, you know, maybe I've kind of figured out the answer, but it's always easier said than done. You know, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook and these different social media platforms. And obviously, if you are conservative and you're on social media, then you got a couple different options. Okay. You either just are quiet about what you believe and you don't challenge people, you don't sort of rock the boat. And I would say this is probably a little bit more for Facebook. Because Twitter seems to be more about interacting with strangers. And then, you know, if you're a personality, I think it's probably about interacting with your fans. But Facebook is more about your circle of friends and just interacting with mainly people that you know. Or there's a lot of people on Facebook that are periphery, but there's some sort of connection. There's a you may deal with those people out in real life, whereas Twitter, it's you know, a little bit more prim. And I'm sure other people have other. I'm sure that the media is a different thing and whatever, but I'm just kind of speaking from my perspective. So you either sort of hide your beliefs and just avoid confrontation, or you are constantly sort of at odds with people and challenging statements. And again, I think the strategy is different for even Facebook and Twitter. I will say that on Facebook, there's a lot fewer people that know exactly where I stand politically. And, on Twitter, it's a little bit more apparent, or a lot more apparent. I'm pretty open. I'm pretty open on Twitter. It's aggravating to get into these sort of Twitter battles. I have been involved in a Twitter battle with a girl for now like three going on 4 days, and I've got into some more sort of Twitter spats last night, and it can be a time consuming thing. It can affect your family life. It can really affect your personal life. It can affect your personal well-being. And so I think at the end of the day, you have to kind of look and go, well, is it worth it? You know, is it worth it to, because number one, the platforms are against you. The more conservative you are, the fewer people hear you on Twitter. That's that one thing is very clear. Unless I sort of am directly engaging people, for the most part, like the general public doesn't see my messages. I hadn't even been on Twitter with this particular account very long, but it didn't take them long to identify me as conservative. And they call it like shadow banning, and it's just basically where you can be putting comments out there, but unless people are following you, they're not really seeing them. Unless you're engaging people directly, and you know, so it's like, well, is it better for my own well-being that I just say, I can't do this. I'm arguing with idiots, people that hate me because I have a different opinion, and I don't hate them. I don't know, you know. I think to hate somebody, for me, I have to know them. They have to have done something sort of egregious to me. But, well, I take that back. I hate Al Franken, and I don't know him. And there's some other public figures, but. For the most part, I will disagree with people, but I won't have any real sort of vitriol or wish them harm. But it seems like you can get into some I'm always sort of surprised how mean people can get. I know that sounds like, oh my gosh, they're so mean to me. But seriously, the way people talk online and sort of the lack there was a video I watched, and this obviously isn't related to Twitter or Facebook, but there was a video I watched on YouTube. I shouldn't have watched it. I don't know why I did, but it was like a video of people falling off cliffs. And I kind of thought that with YouTube, I didn't think you could put videos of like people dying on YouTube. I thought with their family friendly content that like, if you put something on there like that, you had to put that, okay, well, you know, they survived. And, there were like five different situations where people fell, and out of the five, two of the situations, people died, and it was very obvious that they died. And, but there was one that it wasn't exactly clear. And so I kind of went to the comments section to see if, you know, the person who'd uploaded the video was going to clarify that. And, man, the stuff that people said, just the callousness. I was really taken aback that people were just making fun of the people that died. They watched a video of somebody dying. And like one of the situations, I don't know what the guy was thinking. I don't know if he wanted to kill himself or if, you know, maybe he wasn't all there or something, but, you know, he sort of actively like put himself in harm's way. But there was another video that was like a family, and it was all these people in some third world country, and they were all playing in this river, and then it was like a flash flood, and all of a sudden there was all this water and this, like, I don't know if it was a family or something, but there's like adults and some kids get trapped out with this rushing water, and there's like a huge cliff. They just get swept away. And these people are, you know, like, oh, hashtag Darwin Awards, and yep, you know, that's what happens, and just like making fun of them and just all this stuff. And I thought, geez, man, like, you just watched somebody die. You just watched like a kid die. And that's what you've got to say about it? Like, what the fuck? You know, what's going on with our culture? And you see that same sort of like vitriol on Twitter, where if you don't think exactly like the popular narrative, man, like, oh, well then, hey, I just wish all the worst for you. I want you to lose your job, and I want people to come kick the shit out of you, and I want your you know, bad things to happen to your family, and you know, so there's sort of this sense of, well, what's better, you know? Is it better to just walk away from all that and go, you know what, I don't need this in my life? My wife gets pissed whenever I'm sitting there, like, with my nose buried in my phone, typing back and forth with some jack off, you know, from across the country who is just an idiot. But you know, if you do that, then you sort of give it to them. Well, I'm just gonna let the retards run the house. You know, I'm just gonna let them have it. You know, or is it better to sit there and fight, and to bang heads and to not let ignorance stand? Just as a quick example, I had these people were saying, well, you know, if you just tax billionaires more, there would be no more homeless. Like they were passionately thinking this. And I said, you know, do you know that the top 10% pay like over 50%, I think it's like 58% of the taxes in the country, and the bottom 50% pay only like 3%. The bottom 20% don't pay anything. So how exactly does that work with your little theory? And there's a girl who has spent days arguing with me, you know, just, well, you're wrong. You're wrong about the taxes. I'm like, well, no, here's some, I put an article from Pew. I put an article from CNBC, and no, I'm not wrong. Well, and she argued many things, but finally it came down to, well, your taxes depend on where you live. Well, your state taxes do, sure, But federal taxes are the fucking same for everybody. And then it came out that the reason I was wrong is because she lives in Canada. You know, she's in a conversation about how if they would just tax billionaires in the U.S., that there would be no homeless. And I'm wrong because she lives in Canada. I just about lost my fucking mind. And then, you know, I finally said, you know, the homeless problem is very complex. There was a lot of mental health issues at play. People are responsible for the decisions. When I was at 18, I was homeless. I rebelled against my dad, and I, you know, just moved out in with these guys, and then that didn't last. And there was a period of a few months that I was just sort of drifting around, sleep outside sometimes. Sometimes I had friends that would let me. And through that experience, I re-examined my life. I went and got my GED. Then I eventually was able to take my ACT and get into college. And I have a history degree. And it was because of that experience. But you can't just throw money at that. You can't just say, you know, a person that's homeless, go, well, here's a pile of money. Problem solved. You're going to be fine now. And you're welcome. You know, that's not how it works. There's a lot of people that if you gave them money, that because of addictions or because of bad personal finances or decisions, they would be right back in that situation. You know, it's, they would break their back to spend that money. So, yeah, and then there's veterans, and I do believe that we really need to do a better job of taking care of our veterans. There's just a lot of complexities in life that it seems like liberals, especially now, are willing to believe these little fairy tales of, oh, well, if we just took more money, then problem would be solved. Somehow the government that you don't even trust, the government that Donald Trump is running, but if we just shoveled more money into the government, that we could just solve it all. You know, we'll get some fucking blue ribbon committee, and they'll go in there and they'll line their pockets. But whatever money's left, we'll just, you know, solve the problem. And so I've just struggled with the idea. Is it more important for me to fight, you know, to sit here and argue with that person, a person who's not going to change their mind? I'm not going to reach them 240 characters at a time where they go, hey, golly, I've lived my whole life around this concepts that are wrong. You've changed my mind. Let's go change the world together. That's not going to happen. So, you know, what is better? Is it, and I'm sure that maybe the answer is to find a balance. But as I was sort of preparing for this podcast, I have tried to sort of find that balance of going, okay, well, look, I'm just not, if I'm spending time with my family, I'm just not going to get on Twitter. I'm not going to mess with it. I'm only going to do that when I have the time. And, you know, I'm going to be careful about my interactions and checking, you know, Facebook and stuff like that. And I'm not going to get into needless fights with family members and you know, things like that. But it's easier said than done, especially when you get caught up in something where you don't, you know, you don't want it to seem like they won, and you don't want you want to get the last word, and you know, you feel like what you're saying is right. And I mean, I've had a lot of Twitter interactions where I am right. I've also had ones where I sort of got myself into a situation and found out that maybe I wasn't, you know, stuff that I thought wasn't right. And you'd think that if you go, oh, well, hey, you know what? You actually made a good point there. and I just did some research trying to prove you wrong, and I found out that I'm wrong. You'd think that because that's sort of the civilized way to have a debate or a conversation is if you get proven wrong, you go, okay, well, you know, point for you. But by golly, don't you dare tell these motherfuckers that they were right on anything, because, you know, then it's you know, then nothing that you're ever going to say is anything. So, I don't know. You know, what do you think on that subject, Dave?
It just depends, excuse me, on the type of person you are, I think, and what you got going on in life. I think, you know, if you're, you know, if you like to not necessarily argue, but you like to debate or argue, or, you know, that's probably a thing where you're going to have a hard time turning it off, you know, when you know you're right. I know I was on Twitter for what, a couple of months or something, maybe.
Right.
And I eventually got banned, and I don't know why, really. They never showed me
conservative.
Any... Yeah, I mean, ultimately it's because I was conservative. I don't know. I had I wonder if it was the fake Joe Biden account that I had, the parody account of Joe Biden, because I was going out and saying some funny stuff. I thought it was funny. But anyway, it just depends, because you do get wrapped up in it when you're arguing with someone. I remember I got in an argument with this woman about the Democrat Party being the creators of the Ku Klux Klan and these Jim Crow laws and stuff, and she just didn't believe me, you know, and I...
Right.
And, you know, she used the old argument, well, the party's flipped, and, you know, she couldn't come up with when that happened. I was like, well, in the 60s, they were still on that, you know, they were doing the segregation thing, Orville Favis, and, you know, Fulbright and all this stuff. So obviously it happened after the 60s when, you know, and, you know, she was just finally just ended up cussing me out and telling me I was an idiot. And,
right.
You know, that's when you kind of know you've won. But it's hard to, when you're, for me anyway, when you're dealing with someone that just won't even listen to anything because it's not what they believe. They, you know, I was watching a Milton Friedman video last night where he's on Donahue, which is, it's hilarious. And he just keeps coming up with logical, common sense stuff to just knock down anything that Phil Donahue throws at him, you know. And one of the quotes he had I thought was funny is, sincerity is an overrated virtue, because you get a lot of these people on the left in particular that are sincere in the things they're saying, even though it makes zero sense and it doesn't give it any more validity because you're sincere about it, you know?
Right. So, like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who mm-hmm. says that it's more important to be morally right than factually right.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you have these, you know, that's what you're up against in a lot of these things, is you're facing someone who believes in whatever it is, whatever it may be, to the point that they will not listen to however many things you throw at them fact wise. They just will not even entertain the thought that you could be correct, or those facts could be correct and they could be wrong, or at least think about it, you know, at least.
Well, like their whole identity is wrapped in that.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
yeah.
They, you know, they almost can't,
mm-hmm.
Because if they did, they would have to re-examine their entire life. I mean, I feel like I'm very political, and there are a lot of beliefs that I hold that are connected to that, but it's not where my identity comes from. And if I were to sort of decide to walk away from politics and just, you know, that kind of thing, like, it wouldn't change who I am, because it's not what defines me. But there's a lot of these people that this stuff defines, you know, who they are. They're so wrapped up in it. They've created a whole personality that's sort of wrapped around their beliefs, and a lot of the things, like, yeah, you know, like you said, they're wrong. I had a guy tell me the other night, and he blocked me pretty quickly. He told me that the parties flipped during Theodore Roosevelt. I'd never heard that one before. Told me that I'm just, you know, hey, rockhead. They always with the name calling. I don't ever call people names on Twitter, but I kept saying that last night. I was arguing with these two guys, and they just kept, you know, progressively the names they were calling me got more and more. And I feel, you know, always with the name calling, you people, you know, why can't you just make a point without making it a personal attack? You know, why are you so angry that I have a different opinion, you know, than you? And it just shows that they're getting, you know, they're losing it. But this guy said Theodore Roosevelt. I said, how does that help you? You know, how does something happening in like the early part of the 20th century help you whenever Jim Crow and segregation and the Democrats voted against, you know, civil rights and all these different things? Like, I guess that gives you Lincoln. I guess that's the only thing it does, but that doesn't help. And I told him, I said, that doesn't help you, to think, cause he was telling me that, he goes, I feel sorry for you. You're part of this party that's stuck in the 19th century. And I thought, you mean the century where, like, the Republicans, you know, fought a war to keep the Union together and freed the slaves. And yeah, that was actually a pretty good century to be a Republican. So, you know, if you were going to be stuck in a century, like, that's not a bad one. And I said, or do you mean the one after where, like, the Republicans passed civil rights and fought against the KKK? And because the KKK was in its little charter, it said it was started to specifically not only just fight black people, but Republicans. And it actually uses the phrase inward loving Republicans. Okay, so, you know, the idea that that's a Republican institution. The reality, I think we've talked about this before, but the parties never flipped. Some of the electorate flipped, and it didn't have to do with racism. It had to do with Christianity. And unfortunately, the KKK was an organization that in a sort of, it was very misguided. Had, you know, ties that those people were Christians. Now, my God, I would not want to have been a part of that and then go face a God. And it's definitely a blight on Christianity. And obviously those people, didn't begin to understand the first thing about the Bible and about their religion, but it had nothing to do with the parties flipping. There was no, that's just a misconception. It's a thing that Democrats tell themselves to hide their evil past. But I think what you're saying is right. It just, depending on who you are, you sort of have to find a balance. But I think it's easier said than done. And I don't, even though I wanted to talk about this, I don't think that I have even found an answer that's even right for me. Last night, I my wife was getting angry as I was, my phone, you know, my face buried in my phone, and eventually I just sort of had to set the phone down. But I will say that I kept thinking, oh God, those motherfuckers, they're probably commenting and they probably think that I, you know, ran away and that they're right, and that bothered me. Now, I don't know who these fuckers are, and who cares? But it bothered me, you know. And so there is a sort of this, social media is not bringing people together. It is bringing people together, but it's bringing them together so they can, you know, bash each other's heads in with the rhetoric and different things like that, occasionally in the physical sense. So I think, and you know, we've never gotten an email from people, but I would love to hear some feedback, some comments. We have an email, Glenn Keck, 2020 at gmail.com. I'm on Twitter and I use that same email for my Twitter handle, Glenn Keck, 2020 at gmail.com. I will say that I am on Twitter. I do not use my real name because the last profile that I did use my real name, and I had some people make some threats to my like 3-year-old daughter, and so because I'm an outspoken conservative on Twitter, I don't use my real name on Twitter. My name is Jose Santiago. So if you want to comment on Twitter or if you want to send us an email, I would probably rather, get the email, because it's, I would love to, again, hear comments and feedback, but feel free to get on and follow me. I just started a profile. I don't have very many, followers. I've actually somehow, attracted some bigger name conservatives have started following me on Twitter. I don't know how or why. I know it's not from this podcast. I guess maybe it's because I've been outspoken, but I mean, I've only got like 22 followers. So Twitter has made it increasingly hard. If you get on there and you're outspoken from day one, really hard to grow your profile and really easy for people to kind of dismiss you as a bot because you don't have that many. You know, I don't follow that many people, and I don't have that many people that follow me. But I would love to hear your feedback and your comments. So send us an email at glenkeck2020 at gmail, or, you know, again, you could get on Twitter. And, you know, tell us what you think about social media. Is it worth it? Is it worth the hassle? But if it's not, is it okay that we just sort of let them have it? That we just let ignorance go unchecked and sort of stupid thoughts, even though it's not really going to change these people's mind, is it worth it to get in and hit them with logic and facts and make them think about it? Because I guarantee you that this girl that has been arguing with me now for like 3 or 4 days, there's some reason that she, and it's, even though we have been kind of like really sort of snide to each other and rude at times, it's been fairly civil. And I wonder if she has sort of this attraction to hearing facts that nobody's ever told her before, even though she's disputing them at every turn. You know, who knows? But for time's sake, I think we'll move on here and talk about what I think is just appalling, and I know you do too, and I think we didn't want to let this go without sort of commenting on it. I just think it's inexcusable, and there's a sort of a quote from the Star Wars movies, the ones that weren't very good, there's like it's like where the emperor is being like voted in as the emperor, something like that. And, everybody's clapping Natalie Portman's character goes, well, this is how democracy dies, you know, to thunderous applause. And that's what you'd see if you looked on the video of New York legalizing like abortions up until due date. People are just we're just doing the great things. You know, it's no longer that they can dismiss it as it's not life. It's not just a clump of cells. If you've ever, you know, had a child before, if you're a man or woman, and they've got these little apps where you can watch how the baby develops each week, and you can see how it's growing. And there's no fucking question that if you are 7, 8, 9 months. I have a nephew that was born at 6 months. Okay. He was fully fucking formed. I mean, obviously he wasn't fully, but he was, he's alive now. He survived. They said he was very healthy. He only weighed like a pound or two, but you know, he didn't come out as a little blob of cells. He was a child, and he's alive now, born at 6 months. You can't. There's the Democrats. They make no bones about it. They're gonna let you murder your fucking child, you sons of bitches, you motherfuckers. How fucking dare you? And you know, Rush talks about it, that Republicans get nervous talking about abortion, but fuck that, dude. It's time to get past that bullshit. It's time to stop with this appeasement. It's not a women's rights issue. I know that, Dave, you've got a lot of facts and stuff, and I know we're running out of time, but just, you know, real quick, this is one of the things I was talking to somebody the other day that's pro-choice, but they're not real sure about how they feel about this new bill. And I said, you know, this idea that it's a woman's choice, a woman's body. Well, why aren't drugs legal? Then why is it illegal to put on a seatbelt? Why do you have to put your kids in a car seat? You know, if it's our bodies, our choice, then why don't we just get to choose everything that we do with our body? Why can't we, choose to take drugs or, you know, drive around without our fucking seatbelt on or all this? Why is there any public safety? It's my body. It's my choice. If I want to fucking get ejected from, you know, the windshield of my car, if I get in a car wreck, well, that's my own choice. How dare you tell me what I have to do, you know, with my own body? I think if you take this logic, and at the end of the day, it's evil. This is just evil. I'm going to get religious for a second and say that the enemy comes to kill, steal, and destroy, and to take and murder children. You can be having your child. You could be in labor and say, you know what? Fuck it. Let's kill this little fucker. And they will murder your child before they put. You're gonna have him or her, you're going to have the child anyway. It's pure evil. And Virginia just passed this, and their governor was on Facebook last night saying that it was disgusting to think he loves children. He's a defender of children. It's disgusting to suggest otherwise. And people, rightly so, were saying, fuck you, guy. You are an evil son of a bitch. What's some of the stuff that you have seen, Dave?
Well, the law that just passed in New York a week or so ago, the changes in it now are, it allows non-physicians to perform abortions, and it's kind of vague on it. It says a healthcare practitioner licensed, certified, or authorized under Title VIII of the education law. I'm not sure what that is in New York. These are all things into the New York Constitution that they're implementing too. It's
not, well, and I think that's probably because you're not going to get a whole lot of doctors,
right?
Because doctors know what a child looks like, mm-hmm. and how they're formed, so they're going to have to let people that aren't doctors. Because I think you're probably going to have a hard time getting enough doctors that want to murder. You know, if you're an OBGYN. If you're a doctor that does prenatal care, and these people are used to bringing life in, they're not going to want to murder fucking children. They know that they're actual people,
right? And I saw some doctors, I think they were Twitter posts or Facebook posts that were published that, you know, I think after a certain amount of time, there is no health risk to the mother anymore after a certain period. So, like, this doesn't make sense as far as saying that the mother, I'm sure there's always, you know, exceptions to the rule, but overall, that after the woman in her pregnancy makes it past a certain point, there is no like danger to her health. And so that kind of, you know, goes against the whole argument against, well, it's, you know, if the woman has health problems, she needs to abort the baby.
Right.
Another provision in this law is it removes protections for babies who survive the abortion procedure, which basically means, you know, they could be left to die or put to death after birth, you know, if the abortion was not, I guess, successful. The law prevents pregnant women whose babies are killed in an attack on the mother from seeking justice. So basically, like if there's a pregnant woman and she gets attacked and she is killed and her baby is killed, it would be much harder to get a double homicide conviction, which is a weird thing. I guess that's, you know, when you're killing babies, you know, in abortion, you don't want to get convicted of murder. I guess what that,
well, I think it's, you know, something like that. They're trying to cover their bases.
Right. And
they're trying to say, well, if we recognize that, because that's something that pro-lifers have used of like, well, if, you know, how is it not a life? If, you know, the mother gets killed, it's a double homicide. So I think they're removing that in some misguided effort that it like, you know, that will end that sort of argument. It doesn't, but, you know, it just sort of shows how the sort of the depths and depravity that these people are willing to go.
Right. And this, these laws are, you know, kind of intended, you know, they're scared to death that they're going to overturn Roe versus Wade. That's what a lot of this is brought up, or some of the comments from these officials that voted for it in New York. That's kind of the consensus on this. They wanted to do this in case the Supreme Court overturns Roe versus Wade at any point, that they can still have abortions there in New York. So, and you know, it's really sick when you watch the video of these people just clapping and cheering it. You know, it really puts a lot of perspective into it. You know, I've got some, you know, people who aren't against abortion or are for abortion. I just hope you'd look at the facts and the things that have, you know, happened. I'm going to read off a few here in a minute, but just really kind of think about this and what it actually is. You know, it's not about a woman's right to her body. You know, this is about killing populations. I mean, when you look at it, it's not much different than things that have gone on in our history where populations are wiped out. Some statistics I've got here from, I've gathered these from the CDC, and kind of the U.S. Census, and then this place called the Guttmacher Institute. They're kind of pro-abortion from what I could gather, but I went ahead and included some of their stuff just to make it quote-unquote fair. Not that I give a shit, but since Roe versus Wade has passed, it's estimated around 60 million abortions have happened. So of those abortions, you know, for all you people who claim racism on things, the percentage of white women is about 60% of America, and around 38% of those women have had an abortion. You know, these statistics, you know, I don't want to get into a statistic argument, but they're kind of hard to track, a lot of them, because some of them are voluntary. Some of these are actual things from the CDC that are reported. But if you look at 60% of white women is the population of the U.S., and black women is about 14% of the population. and they have about the same abortion rate. And so that equates to black women are, you know, about 4 or 5 times more likely to have an abortion. And so that makes the argument. And the, and a lot of these Planned Parenthood places are in lower income black communities. And so when you look at the numbers, and feel free to go look at them online, you know, it's hard to argue against that. It's, you know, it literally is destroying black population. You know, it's pretty scary when you look at the,
well, yeah, 60% of the black people that died last year mm-hmm. were aborted. They never mm-hmm. even got, you know, they never even got to the word go.
Right. Yeah. I encourage people to really go look at all this stuff, and it's very telling. You know, another aspect of it is the Planned Parenthood aspect. They're a, you know, an organization that is pro-abortion, obviously. I don't have to tell you that, but, you know, I was looking into the founder of it, Margaret Sanger. You can look up her as well and find all kinds of interesting things. You know, it's basically a eugenics project is what it, you know, amounted to. She was spoke openly about, you know, aborting and sterilizing people who were defectives, mental defectives, you know, mental retardation or delinquents. Maybe they just were criminals and they had, you know, say this person, these two people, maybe they just weren't outstanding citizens. They were kind of pieces of, you know what, and they decided to start having kids. Her idea was to not let them have kids. And as well as people who didn't provide for themselves, you know, people who couldn't make it on their own, you know, kind of weed out these populations. It's then, you know, she made a very concerted effort to go into the black communities. And one of her tactics was she would get, you know, and she spoke openly about this. Her idea was to get black preachers on board with her and employ them, you know, pay them basically to kind of sugarcoat and introduce abortion into the black communities. You know, she felt like that was a way to kind of ease it in there if she had, because, you know, black people going to church and things, if you have a preacher telling you this, you know, you know, you're a little more open to it than some old crusty white woman coming in there. And so another idea of hers was to, similar to what China does, you know, basically have permits for children. Like if you and your wife want to go have a baby, you would have to go get a permit basically. And what that entailed was they would basically evaluate and deem you worthy of having a child or not, you know, based on, I'm assuming, what you've done with your life. I don't know. Right. Basically decide if you were up to her standards, I guess. And, you know, she's done things like she's given speeches to the Ku Klux Klan, and, you know, there's all kinds of interesting things. The funny thing out of all of this was I read an article by this woman who was trying to, you know, make Margaret Sanger this outstanding citizen and argue against some of the things I mentioned. And it was just, I don't know, it was funny, but it was also sad how they were just trying to defend a lot of this stuff, you know, trying to say, well, you know, at this time, you know, things were different. And, you know, I don't know that those things are different at any time. I mean, killing people and wanting to exterminate people, you know, there was a guy named Hitler back in the day.
I mean, you know, and I think at the end of the day that there's just a, you know, there was a way that I thought before I had kids. I didn't think I could have kids. I mean, I was 34 before my wife got pregnant. I didn't, you know, I didn't think I was going to have kids. I didn't want to have kids. I actually remember a couple times right after her and I having sex, me praying, God, please, don't let her get pregnant. because we weren't even really in a committed relationship before that. And I had a lot of selfish things that I wanted to do that I thought were far more important. I didn't think that my lifestyle, because I was a pretty heavy drinker and user of all kinds of things. I was a musician that went and toured around, toured and did some things. And that was sort of my priority. And I had my life kind of planned out as this sort of selfish thing. And I was definitely sure that that's the way I wanted to. And then the moment she became pregnant, not even the moment I saw my daughter, the moment she became pregnant, everything changed. And then it just continued to change for the 9 months leading up to us having her. And then everything has changed since then. And there I'm absolutely, now we have three kids. We've had three kids in 4 years. So we went from two people that didn't want to have kids to people that have had as many, we're not going to have any more than three, but have had as many kids as we could, you know, in this short amount of time, because we knew that starting late, we had this short window. And I am quite positive that there is nothing that I will ever do that will ever mean anything more than having my kids. And my kids have completed my life, and they have added value to my life in a way that nothing else ever did and nothing else ever could. And things happen to us for a reason. And there are some things that happen to us that are out of our control, but that God means for them to happen so that we can grow and become, you know, there's adversity, there's good things that happen to you, there's bad things that happen to you. And, you know, the idea that you have some sort of control over that, that you get to make decisions for your life, it's just silly. People around you will you'll meet new people and they'll affect your life. People will die and that will affect your life. You don't get to control all that. And becoming a parent, sure, is it better if you're in a committed, you know, relationship and you're married and that you sort of have a good base and a good job? That's true for some people. There are definitely people that say that is the way to success. I know there's a lot of conservative people that, you know, that will say, well, here, if you want to be successful, don't have kids before you're married and, you know, get a good job and all this stuff. But everybody's different and everybody has sort of a different path. But the idea that murdering your child because you've still got stuff that you need to do, or that, you know, there's nothing more important that you'll ever do than being a parent. Not everybody's going to be a parent. Not everybody's supposed to be a parent. Mm-hmm. But the idea that your child needs to be piece by piece ripped out of you, or poisoned and then pulled out of you dead, it's disgusting. And I know that we're out of time here, but I think it's appalling. I think it's demonic. I think it is really a sign of the failing of our society and how low. Now, I do want to say real quick, I saw Lindsey Graham last night, and man, the only thing that I guess I can sort of imagine happened to Lindsey Graham is that maybe the power of God has hit him. And that he has decided to get away from the Lindsey Graham nasty persona, and he's grown a big old fat set of nuts, and he's decided that he's going to, be the champion and the hero. I hope it's genuine, I really do. But he was on Hannity last night, and among other things, he is introducing a bill into the Senate that would make it illegal to have an abortion after 5 months. And, you know, so obviously there's this whole thing that's happened with these two states, with New York and with Virginia, and will probably begin to happen in other states. The fight's not over. And I urge people, you know, sure, you know, we can all we can all get on and we can argue with people and we can argue with our family and strangers and whatever. And maybe we should. Maybe it's time to not be so silent. Maybe it's time to sort of take up the mantle and go to war. But I urge you, and I wish I had time to read this, but maybe I'll read it next time. But pray, you know, if you're a Christian, pray. If you're not a Christian, pray. You don't have to pray, you know, you don't have to pray in a Christian way to God. But if you believe that some of these things in the world are changing for the worst and that there's, you know, things going on that shouldn't and you feel powerless, you know, that's where some of the people that lash out on Twitter and look like fools, that's what I think where it comes from, is this feeling of powerlessness. And every time I feel that way, I go to God and I just pray. And because in a lot of ways, he's the only one who can intervene. And there's a verse in the Bible that says it would be better that you hang a millstone around your neck and are cast in the middle of the ocean than you hurt one of God's little ones. And, you know, I just, that there's a world beyond this one that we will be judged for. And these people that are applauding, I don't want to make assumptions, but I would not want to go face God. So, Dave, do you have anything you want to say in closing?
Just, you know, if you are on the fence about abortion, I urge you to go look at some of these stats and things. And also just look, don't try to find and watch an abortion procedure. I don't know, maybe that's what it takes. I certainly don't want to watch one. But if you just even read about the procedure, and, you know, I ran across a couple of pictures, you know, doing the research for this, and it's just, man, I think it'll change your mind on a lot of this if you just really think about it, look at it.
Well, and if you don't want to get into if you don't want to get into seeing something, now Kamala Harris says that if you're a gun proponent, you should have to watch the autopsy of somebody who's been shot by a gun. I think that's going to backfire because of obvious reasons. If that's the way she thinks, then I think she should have to watch an abortion. But if you don't want to go to that, there is a great video, and I'll try to maybe find the link and mention it here again. But it's about a doctor who's like an ex-abortion doctor, and I think he's talking to like the UN. Basically, he's talking about he had been one of the pioneer abortion doctors, and then he's talking about why he'll never do an abortion, and he's describing the procedure, and it's graphic, but you don't have to see pictures. So there are things that you can look up like that. So just, you know, do your own research, you know, we appreciate you listening to us. And so for Glenn Keck and MAGA Dave, hopefully, you know, you can have a good day. Thanks for listening.